Studio 360.
This summer, Ethan Hawke turned out a lot of big work, both as an actor in the movies First Reformed and Juliet Naked, and also as a director in his fourth film, Blaze, which is about a country western singer-songwriter who called himself Blaze Foley and died young with only a small cult of fans.
Lucinda Williams wrote a song called Drunken Angel about Blaze.
Well, this was written about a songwriter I knew back in Texas by the name of Blaze Foley.
Ideally, the movie doesn't aspire to be a Wikipedia biopic. It aspires to be kind of using Blaze's life and legend as a dialogue about creativity and love, sex, and death. It tries to be a blues song.
We've got a clip from the movie. This is Ben Dickey playing Blaze Foley and Alia Shawkat playing his girlfriend Sybil Rosen.
So you're going to be a big country star, like Roger Miller?
Huh?
I don't want to be a star. I want to be a legend.
Well, what's the difference, Debbie?
Well, stars burn out because they shine for themselves. Look at me shine. Look at me glow. I'm amazing. Legend lasts forever.
So to make a biopic, a show business biopic about a guy who isn't famous at all, there's something kind of beautifully perverse about that, right?
Virtually every biopic you see about a musician is about an internationally world famous
Ray Charles.
Yeah, yeah. Johnny Cash, yeah, yeah. You know, Billie Holiday. You think of it. I did one, Chet Baker. You know, I mean, they're always about some brilliant person who had a tremendous amount of success. And the subtext of that is that their life is interesting because they're famous. But what I wanted to do is thought, wouldn't it be fun to make a movie about a musician who never made it? You never have the scene where they make it big.
Right.
You never have the scene at the Grammys where they get too drunk.
The actors who play those famous musicians in biopics generally learn to play or to convincingly mm-hmm. pretend to play their instruments. As Chet Baker, right, you kind of learned the trumpet.
Yeah.
But in Blaze, you cast two musicians to play the lead roles as musicians, not only Ben Dickey as Blaze, but also Charlie Sexton as his fellow outlaw country singer Townes Van Zandt. Now, as it turned out, both of them are phenomenal naturals, but why didn't you just hire experienced professional actors?
I was playing Chet Baker.
The great 50s jazz trumpeter
yep.
in the biopic about him.
And I was really working hard to play the trumpet. And I really realized that to really understand this person, you needed to understand his relationship to his instrument. And that in a lot of ways, the best parts of him were revealed in that relationship.
I'm one of the greatest trumpet players of my generation. One of the best jazz improvisationalists.
So is trumpet or nothing?
Yes.
How he played, how he practiced, how he listened, how he worked with others in relationship to music, and that was where his love was available, and that I couldn't get at that, and that's the most true part of him. And I thought to myself, you know, if I ever made a movie about musicians, I'd rather find a musician with an aptitude for acting, and I would rather than spend 2 years teaching someone to play the trumpet, I'd rather spend 2 years teaching them to act and have them already play the trumpet, you know?
Yeah. Well, and they're performers, so they're halfway there already, right?
They're halfway, and if they're a certain kind of performer, it's really just adjusting the dial.
As an actor, you've worked with some great filmmakers, Peter Weir, Alfonso Cuarón, Richard Linklater again and again in Before Sunrise and then the sequels and in The Amazing Boyhood. Are there things you've learned from those people for your work as a director?
Actors get to spend time on sets with lots of different directors.
That's what I'm saying.
And you get to see very obviously that there is not a right way to make a movie, that there are so many different ways to create something worth watching. Everybody's got a different approach.
What about the opposite? Directors who can remain nameless if you want, who like, nah, I'm never going to do that. Or, nope, that's something I want to avoid.
Every time I hear a director say, my film, I want to punch him in the face. And it's such a collaborative medium. And I hear them say that all the time. My work, my film, in my work, my vision, my thing. To me, that is the essence of making a good film, is being available for life to come into the whole team. Most of the time, acting, directing, it's all about moving energy.
Another movie you appear in that came out this year recently, First Reformed, this Paul Schrader film. He wrote and directed it. You play this alcoholic Protestant minister in this rural church. We have a clip of that as well, where your guy, your Reverend...
Reverend Toller.
Toller is counseling one of his congregants, Michael, this young environmentalist who is full of existential dread about the fate of the world. That's about sets it up, doesn't
yeah,
it?
I think okay.
So, you know my story.
Yeah. You were a chaplain.
My father taught at VMI. I encouraged my son to enlist. It was a family tradition. Like his father, my father, for me. Patriotic tradition. My wife was very opposed. My son enlisted anyway, and 6 months later he was dead in Iraq. I talked my son into a war that had no moral justification.
You know, people of faith, they're often dramatized either in some kind of cartoon way, or they're a diabolic. You know, when you see a priest in a movie, he's either like, you know, crazy, lunatic, mean, or a buffoon, or they're very rarely a film engaged in looking at what it means to dedicate your life to your inner life. I related to this character's search on a profound level. I don't know any other vocabulary, it all sounds so corny, but I really enjoyed playing it as hard as it was.
Yeah. You got famous as a teenager in Dead Poets Society.
Mm-hmm.
And then pretty immediately were, as they say, changing lanes a lot, right? I mean, you did Chekhov on Broadway at mm-hmm. age 22. You published your first novel at 26. Was that in response to like, hey, I'm not just going to do the normal cute movie star trajectory that has been plotted for me. I'm gonna do these other things. Or was that a conscious like, no, screw you. I'm not that guy. I'm gonna write a novel. I'm gonna do Chekhov.
Acting is cruel to people, you know. I mean, it they celebrate you 1 second and disdain you the next. And so I never took any of the celebration very seriously. There was never any screw you attached to it. It was
right.
Really basically like, hey, I want my obituary to be mine, not yours. I remember when I did a film of Hamlet, and there are people that rolled their eyes. Well, now he wants to play Hamlet. Like, why should this my life?
Yes.
You know, and what world wouldn't I want to play Hamlet?
Right.
I mean, if I'm an aspiring actor, give me a break.
Because you're a movie star, you're not supposed to do those serious things,
exactly.
Because that makes you pretentious.
I remember I was 25. My hero. I love the Steppenwolf Theater Company.
In Chicago,
they were what I wanted to do with my life. And I got offered to be in Buried Child for the 20th anniversary of Steppenwolf Theater Company. I went down there.
Big Sam Shepard play.
Big Sam Shepard, Pulitzer Prize winning Sam Shepard play. Sam was going to be there. Gary Sinise was directing. It was very exciting. And I remember everybody kept asking me, why are you doing this? And I kept thinking, this is the greatest job I've ever been on. What am I supposed to be doing? And that's where I learned that people are just inherently mistrustful if you're not blindly chasing money all the time.
Or fame, or both.
Or fame, or
yeah.
both.
Yeah.
But if your goal, because I wasn't trying to be a good person.
I
was extremely ambitious. I was really trying to be a great actor.
Right.
And I felt that this was the path The path to really excelling at my profession was to take care of my education. So I tried to write. I tried to act in plays. I tried to...
Because you dropped out of college to become a movie star.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, so I did have a feeling of that I was behind.
Right. In an interview recently, you kind of stepped in it with the comics superhero Twitter sphere when you basically said that Marvel superhero movies, even very good ones like Logan, simply aren't among the great works of cinema.
Here's the thing. I'm not talking about the quality of the movies. There is an unbelievable priority put on making money. My business doesn't exist in the same way. Studios aren't making dramas. If your dream in life is to star in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest or Five Easy Pieces or Reds or, you know, like serious dramas, right? They're not being made in the same way that they were because there is a huge priority put on They would rather make one movie for $100 million than 10 movies for $10 million. I get it. They're in a business. I'm not a businessman. So I'm allowed to say, I wish they made some other kinds of movies. I was never, the reason why I talked about Logan, for example, is because I love Logan.
Right. And it is really good for a superhero movie.
It's a really good movie on its own, but it gets... I've never believed in high art and low art. There is art that people put their thought and their brains and their love into, and they do it sometimes in werewolf pictures or superhero movies. Right. There's no doubt in my mind that Scott Derrickson put his heart, blood, and soul into Doctor Strange. There's no doubt in my mind. My daughter had a religious experience at Doctor Strange. I'm not disrespecting that form. I'm talking about where is everybody else?
Yep.
And it's when a movie like Moonlight, you know, can make money. See, that sends a signal to everybody in our industry. Hey, guys, audiences don't just want to see one thing. You know, yep. That's what I'm talking about.
I hear you. And happy to have that.
But boy, howdy, did I get kicked in the teeth.
Boy, howdy, you did. But television, of course, has been for 10 or 20 years, the place where that kind of seriousness you're talking about can be done, is done more often.
One of the problems I have with television as a viewer is I feel people shucking and jiving trying to entertain me until they run out of shucking and jiving, right? And what I love about The Godfather, what I love about Citizen Kane, right? What I love about cinema
is you have only 2 hours to do it and you can't chuck and jive as much, for one thing.
There's an art form to doing a great TV show and there's an art form to doing a great movie. And I do think one thing that you're right about is that a lot of the best dramatic acting does exist in TV.
Right.
And in the same way that a lot of the best writers used to go to the theater, they're now going to television. And writers and actors... you know, go together.
Yeah. For your whole career, as I've looked back on it, you seem to have sought out roles that are older than you actually are. Now, at 47, you're playing a grandfather in Juliet Naked. But even back when you were 35, you played a father to a full-grown son in The Hottest State, as you did also in Boyhood in your early 40s. Is that a thing you've done purposefully?
My first movie, I was 13 years old, building my own spaceship, and now I've played a grandfather. Now, I'm a young grandfather, but I like being ahead of that instead of I'm not sitting here resisting it.
Right.
There must be a reason we're supposed to grow old. There's things to be learned here, and there's things to be gained. And I remember I saw a photo the other day when I was 16, and I remember that I loved that photo when it came out. You know, it's like in my mom's thing, because I really thought I looked old, you know?
Yeah.
And I started thinking about, I wonder, I don't want that feeling to go away. Meaning, I want to look at a photo and say, wow, I look old in that. Like with a smile, like, I'm getting there, you know?
Yeah. Is that the plan for the next 20 years, 30 years? To acting as the center gig?
You know, there's a lot of ways to grow up. I mean, my hope is to use acting to integrate it with my life, to grow up and be a person that can be of use in the world not just kind of talk about what's good and bad in movies, yeah. You know, which I love. Get me wrong. Talking about TV shows and superhero movies. And
right.
I mean, I'm a full blown geek, right?
Right.
I love to talk about right. this stuff. And, my, dissatisfaction with different things, which I think sometimes people think is like pretentious or something, is actually what I mean about how hard it is to swim against the tide. And when everybody talks about how great TV is, well, then everybody starts working in TV.
I understand.
And then all the jobs are in TV and they don't have that talent right. level attached to them. And right. there's just a ton of money being spent and a lot of confusion. So I'm looking at it from a slightly different angle, but not usually the angle that is actually getting put on me.
Right.
Writing and directing is something where I can... It's really pure, like, for the love of creativity.
Right.
And I try to keep them protected. Acting, yeah. I have done some jobs in my life where, you know, I really want creative freedom. I call it playing a wedding. You know, sometimes even a good band plays a wedding.
Right.
You know, and it doesn't mean you don't do your best, and it doesn't mean you don't put everything in it. And it means it's not... When you're making Boyhood... And you're acting in Boyhood, and you're working with Richard Linklater on this very dangerous, wild idea of making a movie over 12 years. And it's, my job doesn't get more interesting
right.
than that.
It's a mission.
Right. It's a mission, right? It's part of why I want to be alive,
mm-hmm.
right? Blaze feels that way to me, too.
I don't know if there's a coincidence that now that you're fully middle-aged, like, this is kind of your time. I mean, it's like you were ready for it.
Well, look, man, I've been working really hard
yeah.
to be ready for it.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, I like to have an end game. You know, my end game isn't now. You know, my end game is Lear at 80.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you got to be ready for that. You can't just like phone in your whole life and then at 80 play King Lear.
Right.
You know, you have to prepare right. your whole life.
Right.
And if you're doing that, then what's great about that is the kind of more obvious success and failures and the ups and downs of that roller coaster, they flatten out a little bit and my life becomes livable because I know that success and failure is often determined by simply how what you're doing intersects with what the public wants. It's not really a metric for how you're doing.
Right. Ethan Hawke, thank you very much for coming in today. I've really enjoyed talking to you.
Well, I... enjoyed my time too.
Good. Excellent. The sun came up, it was another day. The sun went down, you were blown away. Why'd you let go of your guitar? Why'd you ever let it go that far? Drunk an angel. You can see Ethan Hawke's latest work pretty much anywhere you watch movies. First Reformed is now streaming, and both Juliet Naked and Blaze are in theaters nationwide.